everyone. Welcome to the Tribcast. This is Margareta Reeve Boulding of Houston, and I will be celebrating my 89th Thanksgiving. So I join my grandson, Reeve Hamilton, in wishing all of you a happy Thanksgiving weekend. And, oh, a special hello for that cute Evan Smith.
Thank you very much to my grandmother. This is Reeve Hamilton with the Tribcast for Thanksgiving week. Joining me is her favorite Tribune employee, CEO and editor-in-chief, Evan Smith.
I'm glad I'm somebody's favorite. What is her, what do you call her? You don't call
Granny.
Her grandma. Granny?
Granny, yeah.
What's her nickname?
Beto.
Beto.
Yeah, like O'Rourke, but with two T's.
So her name is Robert Francis Boulding, is that what she is, like
yes.
The other Beto?
Yes. And you know, she was, according to a 1982 issue of the Victoria.
Are you going to introduce the rest
no,
of
I'm
us?
No, I'm talking about my grandmother with Evan.
Stand down, Emily.
Yeah, she was Houston's leading humorous speaker in 1982.
Was she?
Yes, so if you happen to be in a
apparently
women's group
in the
80s.
Generations.
Well, she might want to get her eyes checked if she's saying that cute Evan Smith.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Just because of that, we're going to introduce...
Let's talk about your stomach problems.
Okay. That's an inside joke. It's our first inside joke of the Tribcast. Ross Ramsey.
I think that Beto O'Rourke joke
I'm
was
staying
a
out of
inside joke.
Ross Ramsey, executive editor, is also here.
And staying out of this conversation.
How's your stomach?
I'm fine.
Good.
He's got a cold, though, as you might be able to hear in his
right.
voice.
No,
the,
at the end, we're going to list all of our health problems. We're going to go around the table. Editor Emily Ramshaw is also there and accosting people.
Accosting who?
Evan. Everyone.
Well, for instance, hello.
Typhoid Ramshaw, she's known her in here.
Right. I know, it's true.
Now, because Thanksgiving is a time of reflection, I thought we might start by reviewing Chris Cillizza of the Washington Post's picks for the worst candidate of this election cycle. He chose...
How is it possible that two guys who talked about rape in terms that put off every woman in America and half the men...
And killed the presidential candidate's chances, arguably.
How is it possible that Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch were worse candidates than Rick Perry?
Which is who
we're
he
not, we're not. We're not worse candidates than Rick Perry.
Well, you know, the counter theory on this is the first person that gets the arrows. You know, the primary for 2016 started the day or the minute it was clear Mitt Romney wasn't going to win this race. So the first person they start attacking, you know, one theory of the case is the first person that starts getting the attacks is the Governor one everybody Perry. Wants to knock down for that race.
We should say Governor Perry was the pick. We don't know.
Yeah,
right.
You sort of interrupted that for your little rant about Todd Akin.
First time
okay,
I've interrupted you ever.
Is the threshold how far you had to fall or how dramatic your fall was? I mean, that's...
I just think it's how bad your campaign was. I'm not certain it's about falling or rising.
Well,
I mean,
if you're running for the presidency and you have this sort of dramatic meltdown, does that qualify you for this role more than, you know, running for Congress and saying something idiotic?
Well, so Todd Akin had the one gaffe. It just happened to be a gaffe
the about one gaffe.
The definition
and
of
then
rape.
The commercial, the horrible commercial that turned out to be a gaffe of its own
that
explaining
actually,
the gaffe.
That edged out Rick Perry's strong ad for worst commercial.
Calling right. that one gaffe is like calling Doug Flutie's Hail Mary one pass. It's not one gaffe.
I don't even know who Doug Flutie is.
Oh, please. He was a musician.
Better go back to Evan's cute.
He played the flutie. He was in an orchestra. Never mind.
He's a short guy.
He is a little guy. He's a little bitty guy.
But he's part of Evan's club.
But the point here is that Rick Perry's campaign, I think it has to do, Emily, to your question, I think it has to do with expectations, because otherwise, how do you not make Herman... How is Herman Cain's not campaign,
right.
campaign not worse than Rick Perry's campaign?
Right.
It's because nobody gave Herman Cain a chance.
And how come the smoking campaign manager wasn't one of the worst ads
oh,
of the year?
Oh, that guy was
God,
so
that was
great.
Such
and
a
how
great
come,
ad.
And
how come
other,
it wasn't one of the best ads?
Here's the other
best,
one.
It's the best ad.
Here's the other one. Is how come the Roger Williams donkey ad wasn't the best
Wait,
ad of the year?
Yeah, that ad is a wonderful ad.
Yeah, that's the best ad I've seen in a long time.
But I think this gets to one of my big questions about Cillizza's list was why was Rick Sanchez on the list of worst candidates?
Rick Sanchez?
Yeah.
The TV guy?
Not the Taze guy. Not the Taze Bro guy. The guy down here who was going to run for Senate and didn't.
Because his house burned down at Thanksgiving.
That makes him the worst candidate?
And so, that's hilarious.
No, I mean, that's why he got out of the race. He wasn't ever a candidate. He gets in the race. He's not raising much money. His house
so
burns down. He goes, listen,
so
I got a bunch
we're
of stuff
picking
to take care
on
of.
Arson victims? No, but bad candidates?
Cillizza chose him as like the third runner up for worst candidate of
the
cycle.
The wow.
Again, if he's third worst, then he was worse than either Akin or Murdoch, assuming
what I mean.
That one or the other
right.
was second.
So maybe the threshold was not just, you know, stupidity, but like really embarrassing things.
I think the threshold was the performance relative to the expectation. Because his point with Sanchez was everyone thought he was going to come in and finally the Democrats were going to have a chance, but then...
Well, that's crap. Nobody actually thought that. Only people who don't live here thought that.
Let's see what Abu Ghraib looks like in a political ad. That would have been great.
In the meantime, the New Republic said this morning, some guy at the New Republic said that he believes that contrary to everything that's been said in the last 2 weeks, that Texas is going to turn blue in 2028. I mean, this idea that somehow Rick Sanchez or anybody else was going to be competitive this year, it just shows a lack of knowledge.
Right. In fact, most of the statewide Democrats performed less well this year than they did 4 years ago. Right? So everybody 4 years ago and even 2 years ago on the Democratic side statewide was making 43-44%.
Sadler barely got over 40, right?
And most of the statewide candidates finished in the 39-40-41 range this time.
I think that Rick Perry is going to have his revenge, though, on this. Because as much as Rick Perry may have been the worst candidate of the year by Syliza, the fact is he goes into this legislative session as powerful as he has ever been. As dominant a figure in Texas politics, I think, as he's ever been. Contrary to any suggestion that Perry was going to come out of that presidential campaign weakened.
Right.
It was really like that season of Dallas where Victoria Principal realized the entire thing was a dream.
That's the one right? that Doug Flutie's from.
Yes, he was on that season. It was amazing. He threw a great pass, and Bobby Ewing caught it. It was fantastic. That season, for all practical purposes, was a dream, that presidential campaign. Because Perry has come
for
back.
Him.
It's been effectively, but it's been effective. But for him,
but it has
and
no
by
effect
extension
on his, it
for
has
the
no
rest
apparent
of us.
Effect on his career or standing. It's
well,
weird.
It would only have an effect on his
in
career
Texas.
If he ran for president again, as he's discussing doing, and every time he got in front of an audience, they started just tittering. Laughing.
Although it does seem to erase the exact problem that he's getting knocked for here, which is that if he runs again, the expectations for him nationally will be at the floor, and he will not have to do much to exceed them.
Right, but I don't think that he simply I don't think he just walks back out on the presidential campaign stage and all is forgiven. I think he has to go on a reputation recovery tour of the country. He has to sit on Jay Leno's couch and make fun of himself.
He is not
he's
going
got a
back
lot
on
of work.
National stage.
You think he's not running for president again?
No.
I will bet you right now $10,000 of Mitt Romney's dollars that he's more likely to run for president than governor.
I think he may be able to sort of, you know, rescue his reputation in Texas. I think on a national stage that will never be forgotten.
Self-awareness is a dangerous thing.
The first trick in this is going to be the financial primary and whether he
can
get the
money on it now.
I think he just did.
I just bet you $10,000 of Mitt Romney's dollars.
Let's put real money.
Yeah.
I'll bet you a sandwich at the new foreign and domestic trailer.
I'll do $10 million of Mitt Romney's dollars.
A delicious sandwich. Not even a crappy sandwich. A yummy sandwich.
From that new 7-Eleven downtown?
How about 10 sandwiches?
I'll bet you a slushy.
Perry's first trick is going to be convincing the finance people that they should put some money into either a gubernatorial race or B, a presidential race.
I don't think he's running for governor.
What's the third option? Don't run.
Running for governor.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did run for governor. I mean, he's all the steps he's taking ahead of this session. He is everywhere. Almost every day we're getting a press release of some, you know, media veil or some place where he's unveiling some new legislation.
He's asserting his relevance.
But
I presume he runs for both.
So you think both? You think
Ross is couching
governor,
his
but not president?
No, I'm not.
I think president.
No,
but
I'm not.
Not
I've
governor.
Actually written it.
I think president, but not governor. Now, what about the George P. Bush incursion?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you know, you've got a brand name. You sort of jump the line, but Ted Cruz proved that you can jump the line with some success. You know, so this sort of orderly Republican, you know, and you're next, and you're next, and you're next. That's out of the way.
Sounds like a smart New York Times column.
Don't you like the idea of having a governor the same age as Brandy? I mean,
the singer?
The Republicans,
he's much younger than Brandy.
The Republicans are getting caught here. They've got a
much
generation.
Much younger than Moesha. You want me to drop a little Moesha? What is this, BuzzFeed now? All of a sudden, I'm dropping 90s TV references.
Doug Flutie's appearance on Moesha is also a classic.
You get this generation.
I think I might have
it was
seen
a,
that one.
A very special two-part episode. It was like the Doobie Brothers on What's Happening. Keep up.
You've got this generation of Republicans who've been waiting for Kay Hutchison and Rick Perry to get out of the way so they can move up the org chart. And they're now old enough that they probably only have one more race in them. You know, Jerry Patterson and Susan Combs are probably...
both in their 60s.
Right. And
she's 66. He's about 65 or 66, right?
They've probably just got one more race. And then you've got this new generation coming up, so we're not waiting for anybody. David Duhurst is in that same category,
Staples
by the way.
Staples can afford to wait.
Duhurst, Patterson, Combs, they're like, you know, probably one more race here, and the governor may or may not be moving on. Greg Abbott wants that job, and here comes George P. Bush, and he can jump all of them in line. He's got better name ID on the first day than any of them who've been in office
and,
for all these years.
And let's talk about the built-in advantages that George P. has. First of all, he's Hispanic at a time when that's voguish within the Republican Party to solve their problem by actually nominating Hispanics, which they're not really doing in great numbers. And they've, you know, if you believe the fallout of this last election cycle, they got a problem that George P. Bush could be part of the solution to. But he also has the benefit of having not just an Anglo surname, which inoculates him from some of the problems that some Hispanics have had in Republican primaries. He has that Anglo surname.
Right.
So he enjoys the network of Bush supporters who are all allied on behalf of Kay Hutchison. See how that worked out.
Right.
But still, all those people who are Bush people, I think, naturally gravitated, and he endorsed Ted Cruz for the Senate when Ted Cruz was at like 2 or 3 points in the polls.
They hate this, but they're the Texas Kennedys.
And don't you think?
And you know, the franchise is worth a lot of money. I mean, the fundraising letters from this guy come from two former presidents, two former governors, two former first ladies. It's unbelievable.
Do you?
And he's
counting George W. twice.
I did. I got away with it. Yeah.
It's a fact.
Anyone want to disagree with Emily's?
One former CIA director.
That's right.
One former Republican National Committee chairman. One former Midland school teacher. It's amazing.
Chairman all of the committee to reelect the president.
They're all in one Volkswagen.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, right.
Right.
Do you think he's running for land commissioner, like his father said?
I think the reason that they're talking about land commissioner is because that's the only statewide office that is held by somebody who said he's not going to run again.
For sure.
So he didn't say controller because he didn't want to turn this into a story about a challenge to Combs. He didn't say attorney general because Abbott's sitting there. He didn't say governor, although a lot of people around him are saying governor because Perry's sitting there. So I think that they're going to toss this out.
Could he run for governor?
Yeah.
Sure, he could run for governor.
I mean, with his experience? Well, right. I mean, would he have a decent shot?
What experience do you need?
You don't need any.
It's a weak governor state.
Yeah. It's, you know.
What experience did his uncle have?
There's some, you know. He hasn't been in politics in the same way that George W. had been in politics.
George W. hadn't been in politics.
Yeah, he had been.
George W. was his father's hatchet man in the White House.
And that's politics. And George P. Bush hasn't done even that level of politics.
If wielding a hatchet were enough qualification, where's Governor Paul Bunyan? I mean, I don't think that's more than that.
He's got to build up his political
familiarity
chops.
He needs to
learn how to maneuver. George W. did know how to maneuver.
This is a world in which the outside has become the inside. And not having the liability of having served in office is actually an argument in favor of, I think.
If he's a capable candidate. So, and that's the other thing we don't
really
know.
Well, I don't know. I've never seen him give a single speech. I have no concept.
Throw him in front of a crowd. Let's see what happens.
He did start a stupor pack during the last
stupor pack?
A stupor pack?
A stupor pack.
It stunned all of the opponents?
A super pack. His Maverick pack. That's what
he was one of the people in
and
that.
And he co-chaired the Hispanic Republicans of Texas, right? Didn't
right.
he?
Right, which is basically an offshoot of the Associated Republicans of Texas. And that's kind of the mainline Republicans trying to figure out a way to make themselves viable against the Tea Party.
Okay, so the sort of, you know, attempt to have a Hispanic Republican candidate. What did Ted Cruz's numbers look like among Hispanics?
They didn't look any better than anybody else.
We don't know because they didn't do exit polling in Texas. The Latino Decisions poll, which came out the night before, the day before the election, they literally called it the election eve poll. And there's some question as to the provenance of this. Is it good or bad provenance? Is it a good poll or a bad poll? Had Cruz's share of the Hispanic vote at 35%, Romney's at 29%, a couple of ticks above what Romney got nationally. Mm-hmm. Remember that George W. Bush used to routinely get above 40% when he ran here. He mm-hmm. got 35% in the presidential race in 2000, 40% in 2004. So Cruz essentially did the bottom of the Bush baseline, which, you know, you'd think he would have done better just because you'd think Hispanics would feel some.
So, I mean, then maybe we should be taking the George P. Bush's Hispanic card off the table. I mean, maybe it doesn't matter.
He's not Cuban.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know.
You think that there were Hispanics in Texas who were going, Cruz, great. Oh, he's Cuban.
No,
I'll vote for Sadler.
I don't think he's as associated with Hispanics the way George P. Bush is.
Right. I think that's right, actually. I agree with that.
It's funny,
I don't know how to say that sensitively, but that's...
Associated is George P. Bush with Hispanics?
I don't think he is.
The Hispanic Republicans of Texas, notwithstanding, he's not exactly Razu Unida.
No, he just looks like a tan Bush.
See how they run their campaign will be the answer to that. I mean, does he run it as a, you know, is he going to be a bilingual candidate out there campaigning that way? Is he going to campaign in South Texas? I mean, that's going to frame a lot of your opinion about whether he's running as an Hispanic candidate or not.
He may be more like Jeb Bush, which is to say that he's pan-racial or post-racial as opposed to you know, to anything else.
I think he's an interesting candidate, and I think the political resume is going to go a long way in a field of candidates who nobody really knows. I mean, people don't know who these people are.
Well, the interesting thing here is
voters don't know who
and
these
you and I
are.
Have talked about this offline is if he decides to run for governor, how hosed does Greg Abbott get? I'm asking that as a question, not as a statement.
I think it's a real problem for Abbott.
Because Abbott has been sitting around very patiently figuring he wants to be governor for these many, many years, and he thinks now the opportunity may present if Perry decides not to run.
I waited and waited. Here I am. Nobody cares.
He's been hanging around for a decade patiently, working as Attorney General, figuring that the time would come when he'd be able to run for governor. And exactly at the moment when the opportunity may present, suddenly in comes George P. Bush. And it complicates things at a minimum.
Yeah, well, he can sit around with David Dewhurst and, you know, gripe about this all day. Right?
Except the difference is I think Abbott really has a chance to be governor. And with no disrespect meant to Lieutenant Governor, I don't think Dewhurst has a chance to be governor under these circumstances.
No, but Dewhurst had a chance to be senator, and then Ted Cruz came along.
Right, but Abbott wanted to be lieutenant governor in 2001 when you were still in short pants, and he was asked to move aside so Dewhurst could be.
If you're a voter, this is all a sad story.
But reserved for certain.
No, that was what I was wearing in 2001. It was very in.
If you're a Republican voter, this is all a sad story and everything. But who cares? I mean, they don't really know who Greg Abbott is. Some of them do.
They don't. They've elected him how many times?
Well, his name ID is going to start at around 50%. That's how these go.
We like that Costello guy better.
The Bush family name. The name ID is going to be 100%. I mean, that's
okay. But let me ask you this question, bright boy.
All right.
Could George W. Bush get elected in Texas today?
In that primary?
In a Republican
primary. Not unless you change the number of people voting. Not unless you pull November Republicans into the March primary.
Because the fact is, George W. Bush is, for all practical purposes, viewed here as too liberal relative to the Republican Party's
base.
Well,
and the pushback
now.
On the George Bush
P.
stuff
suffer
has
from
been...
That.
The George P. pushback in Texas has been from sort of the Tea Party and the conservatives. Oh, we don't need another Bush. I mean, if you just read comments on the stories, and you know, he's one of those Bushes, and we don't like those Bushes. Right. We don't, you know, we hate us some Bushes down here.
Especially if you're calling them the Texas Kennedys. Mm-hmm. There's one thing they dislike more than the Bushes.
Well, it is a dynasty. I mean, the Bushes hate the dynasty stuff, but it's a dynasty. What are you going to call it, you know?
It is obviously.
It's a begat thing. I mean, it's, you know.
Can we talk about some non-dynasty members? Evan's been hanging out with a lot of the new people that are coming into the legislature.
Maybe future dynasty members.
The Cecil Bell dynasty. Here we go.
I don't know about Cecil Bell's children. They could all succeed him into the office in Magnolia. It'd be awesome. Ross pointed out to me today that not 24 hours after Bell, who came across as significantly more conservative in the main than I anticipated him to be, he was talked up to me by some Republicans as a more centrist Republican, center-right, clearly a Republican, but somebody who was not necessarily cut from the Tea Party cloth.
Whose seat is he taking?
It's a new district that was drawn up in the House.
It was created by the pairing of Irwin Kane and George Lavender.
Yeah.
Dan Flynn.
So just to understand, Cecil Bell is one of the three members I interviewed yesterday at the Austin Club, part of the 47 43 newbies. He beat two other people in the primary to win the Republican nomination, no general election opponent, so he gets elected, and he comes out of a business background. He has a construction company that builds water and wastewater facilities, and he has a calf and cow ranching operation up there. He was on the Magnolia School Board. In fact, he was president of the Magnolia School Board. So people say, well, you know, he's going to come out of Magnolia, come to the Capitol, and learns a lot of education. He's a small businessman. He's Republican, but he's not the most conservative crayon in the box as you look at this thing. And he got up there, and he was actually quite conservative, I thought, up until the point that I said – I had really said it to Giovanni Capriglione, who is an authentic Tea Party guy, beat Vicky Truitt in the primary. Are you totally opposed to any new taxes, like the governor? Yes, I'm opposed to any new taxes. And I said to Cecil Bell, are you opposed to any new taxes? And he hedged. Not 24 hours after that, Empower Texans had something out this morning attacking right. Cecil Bell for being weak on taxes. It's going to be an interesting session. You know, I've met a bunch of the new members now, going to meet a few more, interviewed a bunch of them, and they really do range. But clearly, the Democrats are going to have a hard time getting any traction at all in this session. Their numbers don't allow them to do anything by themselves or to stop anything by themselves. Republicans can more or less walk all over them again this session the way they did last session. And so the action is really not in the Democratic side of this, but the Republican side of this.
But isn't it not as dire as it was last time?
I think the fact that the Republicans are split empowers the Democrats. You know, the people are going to be looking. People are going to be looking for votes, and if the Republicans are fighting amongst themselves and need votes, the Democrats can play
bargaining chip. But it assumes that the moderate, quote, moderate Republicans, that word is, of course, pejorative,
right,
will be willing to not only buck the Tea Party, but also reach across into the Democratic Party for votes. Because
I think they'll reach for votes wherever they can find votes on whatever issue they're fighting over.
I'll get primaried.
Do you have a sense of what that issue is going to be? What the main issue that is on the minds of the incoming freshmen?
Vouchers, I think.
Well, you know,
vouchers
is a real problem because it's not a straight party line thing. You know, the rural guys.
Was opposed to Vel expressed opposition in principle to vouchers.
There's these factions. You've got urban, suburban, ex-urban, and rural, and they break more strongly on vouchers than Republicans. Conservative Republicans and Democrats do. I mean, it's an easier analysis to say, okay, what's your community like? I'm rural. Okay, that's probably a no vote. And to go down the list that way. I think that's going to be a really tough issue for people.
Bell was towing the Tea Party line, the conservative line on health care. You know, very opposed to the Affordable Care Act. You know,
they all are, though.
Vouchers is exactly
the
kind
Rick
of issue
Scott
that
in Florida
Democrats
is not. I mean, there
on.
Are Republicans who are
no,
starting
I mean
to put their
Texas.
Head up and go, well, okay, yes, but I agree with yes. And they're all so he was very conservative on that, but on the question of vouchers, he was like, no, I'm not for this necessarily.
And I think the Republican Party is really divided on vouchers.
Right, right. And
it's
I think that's
why people assume the House will be the place that vouchers go to
die. That's where the Democrats will get to play. Because it's not a party line issue, right. And it's because everybody's going to be looking for 76 votes wherever they can find them.
And theoretically in the speaker's race.
Right.
Where they'll be able
I don't
to
think there's a speaker's race. I just don't buy it.
Our interactive didn't indicate.
You know, the Hughes has 351 or 451 votes now. One is his, and 450 are on lists put out by Kathy Adams of people who are Republican activists who don't get to vote for speaker.
Right. Those are votes that don't count.
Right.
This can all go away if the speaker would simply produce a list of 76.
Here's the problem with that. If you're a member, and we heard some of this when we were calling around saying, hey, you know, we're putting together our list of who's voting for what. A lot of people, you know, on my list told me, you know, look, off the record, I'm for Strauss. I'm going to be voting for Strauss. There's no question about it. But I haven't talked to all of my groups and all of my people and locked everything down. And I need a little time here.
Change their mind.
And let's talk a little bit about this after Christmas. But right now, I got to take care of some politics.
What will change their minds?
Nothing's going to change their minds. They're just not ready to say.
They're not ready to say publicly. I mean, we called every single member of the Texas House, and only one member said they were supporting Brian Hughes. And it
Brian
was
Hughes.
Brian Hughes.
All right, let me ask you a question.
Did he hesitate? Was there...
institutional Brandy memory, let me ask you a question. In previous...
He called me old, didn't he?
Do you prefer,
I did.
Do you prefer institutional memory or bright boy?
In previous cycles... Doesn't the incumbent speaker on the day after the election, didn't Tom Craddock do this? Doesn't the incumbent speaker on the day after the election put out a list?
Not always. Tom Craddock did because he was overtaking a speaker and was doing it because he was capitalizing on the results of the 2002
election. He didn't do it while he
election.
Was just the incumbent and not in a speaker's race? Say in 05?
Well, you know, what's died here, what's changed here is that they used to collect pledge cards on the night that the session ended. They would gavel the session out in, you know, Memorial Day or whatever, and retire to the speaker's apartment, and, you know, under Gib Lewis or Pete Laney, they would have drinks. Under Tom Craddock, they'd have chocolate, and they'd all sign their pledge cards, and the speaker would walk out and say, you know, I got all the votes I need, and then proceed through the election.
Chocolate?
Yeah.
Craddock doesn't drink, so
he always had a chocolate party. It was pretty nice chocolates. Anyway, so now people don't sign the pledge cards because there were a couple of episodes, as when Strauss overtook Craddock, where enough people had signed pledge cards for Craddock that it was Craddock's race, and yet the House elected Strauss.
The pledge cards are not worth the paper they're written on.
Right, right.
On the other hand, if we want to stop talking about whether there's a speaker's race, let's see the list.
That they're just, I mean, what they're telling us, and, you know, I mean, there's some reason to believe it, is that, you know, he's probably got the votes, but those guys aren't going to put their names out because they don't want to be targets between now and the beginning of the session.
We should probably stop talking about whether or not there's going to be a speaker's race because we talked about it last week and when we also talked about George P. Bush a lot. So we should move on.
Well.
The host asserts himself.
Okay, fine. What do you want to talk
about,
Reeve?
Listening, it's Thanksgiving week anyway.
Your grandmother's going to break out the switch, I'm telling you, when you get to see her.
You know her well. No wonder she likes you so much.
Shut up that cute Evan Smith, Reeve.
She and I both have. We're watching you.
I think we should move on from the legislature. And when you are not hanging out with your family this coming weekend during your Thanksgiving holidays, you can read Emily Ramshaw's and Reeve Hamilton's stories about medical schools in
Brilliant
the state.
You're talking about yourself in the third person. What are you, Bob Dole?
But enough about that. Let's talk about me.
Let's talk about moi. Hey, Granny, who has two thumbs and has a story of the New York Times.
Well, Emily Ramshaw.
Why don't you and Emily talk about that?
Maybe we will.
Yes, Ross and I will go down and get another coffee.
I would like a tall, chai.
Your energy was
tall,
seeming a little low.
Yeah.
It is.
Emily, what's your story going to say?
Well, my story, you were going to say we were moving away from the legislature, but my story really sort of hinges on, so, you know, South Texas, they've been waiting for this medical school for what seems like eons. And I think there was a lot of sort of, you know, quiet or not so quiet resentment slash jealousy slash frustration when the Austin med school vote passed. Because I think, you know, they sort of feel like they've been leapfrogged in their wait to get a medical school in South Texas. Now, the reality is it's not that simple because, you know, the formula being used to fund a med school in Austin is a really different formula than that being used to, sort of that proposed to build a med school in South Texas. I mean, talk a little bit about what, how they're funding it here in Austin and by comparison, you know.
Well, they're funding it because they have an existing infrastructure that's like very supportive and just sort of ripe for the med school creation. They have a well-funded university that's putting up money for a medical school. They have Seton healthcare families putting up money for a teaching hospital. They now have these taxes that will be multiplied from about $54 million to $130 million that will sort of provide the healthcare ecosystem, the safety net for the sort of needy residents of Austin that will use the services at the medical school and the teaching hospital.
And isn't it true that Austin had a tax base that gave them room to raise the money necessary?
You know,
to,
you had voters who
would
approve a 5-cent property tax.
But the but the flexibility on the tax base in the valley did not happen. Right. Is that right? Wouldn't it exist in the same way that it existed? I mean,
well, and a nickel on the tax base in the valley wouldn't raise nearly the money
right.
that
I mean,
the
so
nickel
the problem
in
is
did.
There's not necessarily the tax base there to raise any kind of significant revenue. You know, couple that with the fact that this is a region that doesn't even have a existing hospital district. So, you know, they haven't there. This isn't they don't have a history of funding their healthcare services that way. But they also don't have, you know, this estimated $30 million a year that the UT Med School in Austin is getting from the permanent university fund, which is money that Rave and I have gone around on this, but is, you know, like earmarked for certain flagship universities. So the problem in South Texas is that they need the legislature, which is something that the Austin Med School didn't. They need, you know, an estimated $20 to $30 million a year from lawmakers.
Well, and part of that is also because the Austin Medical School is really just a part of UT Austin, which
right.
is a big change for
so if I'm a legislator and I'm sitting over there, isn't this two supplicants coming in and asking for a hospital, and one of them has a bunch of money to help build the hospital, and the other one doesn't?
No, because UT Austin isn't coming in and asking for a hospital.
UT Austin didn't
UT Austin is making its own hospital, and they don't need you. Thank you very much.
Right. So basically,
except had the taxes not passed the tax referendum not passed on the ballot. UT said they were not going to go forward with it.
UT Austin's money was contingent upon community support.
Right. Right.
But they said that. I mean, it's possible that they could have found a workaround. There are a lot of people that want to see this happen.
Right. And at the end of the day, right, the problem and the biggest difference is that the South Texas Med School needs the ledge. And right. so they're coming in yet another tough budget time with a whole bunch of conservative lawmakers who don't want to spend more money to say, you know, I need you to appropriate all this money.
And who's running point on this in the Valley? Eddie Lucio?
I mean, Eddie
well, a lot of lawmakers are right. focusing on, you know, there are a lot of South Texas lawmakers that really want a law school, and they're coming and asking for a law school.
Right.
So it seems like that is lower down on the priority list for the people with money.
So it's Lucio, but it's you also have, you know, the Hinojosas who have basically publicly said, you think we're going to get this money from the legislature? You know, he's been one of the lawmakers who's been sort of quietly or not so quietly talking to John Sharp at A&M to
right.
say, you know, maybe A&M should come down here and build a med school. It's pretty darn clear that John Sharp has been used as you know, a tool to mobilize UT. John Sharp seems to know that was his role. You know, I think the quote he gave me was that, you know, the most important thing to me is that South Texans, you know, don't get taken for granted.
A former member of Alonzo Cantu's
right.
board on his hospital.
Exactly.
So
John Sharp is.
Uh-huh.
It's
right.
pretty clear that A&M right. doesn't really have any serious plans to build a med school in South Texas.
That doesn't mean they can't get credit for it.
Right.
Exactly.
But, yeah. I mean, I think Alonzo Cantu said for
I'm sorry, I can't hear you over Johnny Manziel's Heisman Trophy. I'm sorry. What? What was that about a medical school?
Alonzo Cantu said this week that if they get a med school in South Texas, a UT med school in South Texas, it will be no large part, you know, John Sharp basically, you know, greased
right.
the wheels.
Did you talk to Alonzo Cantu?
Yes.
How's he doing?
He sounded fantastic, but, you know, a little bit bitter at how long it's taken to get a med school down there.
All right. Well, I think that wraps us up.
Are you done?
Yeah. What are you guys thankful for?
Nana,
I didn't ask you that.
Does Nana have an outro for us?
Well, we don't really do outros.
Anymore.
No, we used to.
Yeah, what are you thankful for?
I don't know. Ramshaw's Colts sweeping through the Tribune?
Yeah.
That's something you're not thankful for.
What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful that Ross now has the cold that I'm recovering from.
This is a sick office.
You know, I'm thankful for the fact that this podcast is going to end momentarily.
On behalf of Evan, Emily, Ross, Todd, and anyone with comments that sends them to tribcast@texastribune.org.
And your Grammy.
Reeve is very thankful
Grammy
for
Hall.
The podcast.
You know, we should have made a Grammy Hall joke, actually.
Oh, my God.
This is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Oh, gosh. I talked to 2,000 people one day. I wasn't this scared.